This is Deanne Penn at the United Nations in New York. Racial freedom has been established across the United States, but the next phase of the struggle involves full and equal access to education, health care, and development. That's according to the Reverend Jesse Jackson, the veteran U.S. civil rights leader who was at U.N. headquarters last week to speak at an event marking the decade of recognition for the contributions, achievements, and challenges of people of African descent worldwide. In an interview with Matt Wells of UN News following the event, he said that the student-led protests to ban rapid-fire assault weapons following the gun rampage at a Florida high school last month was a watershed moment that should lead to a new global coalition of conscience.
This UN international decade for people of African descent getting the attention that they deserve. I mean, it's obviously a decade's a long time to be trying to focus on this very important issue of rights.
Well, even longer, because racism was used as a tool of oppression, a tool of division. It was a pseudoscience. Whites were taught to be superior, blacks were taught to be inferior. And unfortunately, many of us learned our lessons too well. Whites are not superior, blacks not inferior. We're all people measured by our environment, our attainment, our work, our effort. And so, it took a long time to get to the point that racially, we have racial equality. We don't have economic equality. And race was used to oppress us, deny us access to resources. So we're racially equal, but our education is not equal. Access to health care is not equal. Access to development is not equal. And so that's the next phase of our struggle, beyond racial freedom, racial equality.
What's your overall assessment of the state of racial justice across the world today?
Well, we've seen some tremendous breakthroughs within our own country in the last 50 years since this is the anniversary of Dr. King's assassination. We've been bequeathed the right to vote. And we've gone from the balcony in Memphis where he was killed to the balcony at the White House where President Barack overlooked the Potomac River as president. So the right to vote has had some noticeable effect in cities, mayors of cities, and the Congress and legislators, that progress has been made. On the other hand, there's been a terrible reaction to our progress the last few years, led by the fearful Trump forces, anti-racial justice, anti-gender equality forces. There's been a kind of setback, but we're fighting back. I'm convinced that with that vote, it's now our strongest tool in this struggle. The race for Congress in Pennsylvania. We won the battle in a Congress district that Trump had won by 20 points. In the struggle for the governor of New Jersey, we won that battle. Now an African-American is losing the governor. In the struggle in Virginia, where the right wing chose to embrace the Confederate statues of Robert E. Lee, we chose another direction. We won that battle. In Alabama, December 12th, we won it because those who once were denied the right to vote are forming coalitions, black and white women and Latinos, Native Americans, fighting for our common and shared interests.
Is it naive to think that we can ever eliminate racial discrimination? Is that really an impossible dream in a way?
You certainly can reduce it by having effective laws that enforce. For example, there's virtually no racial discrimination now in access to public accommodations because it's illegal and it's costly. Dr. King gave a speech in Washington, 1963. From Texas to Florida to Maryland, we couldn't use a single public toilet. We couldn't buy a room, rent a room. Black and brown soldiers could not sit behind Nazi prisoners of war on American military bases. We changed that law, and that it changed behavior. So that's virtually eliminated. Politically, we got the right to vote, but the forces that granted the right to vote have never stopped trying to nullify the vote that was granted in 1965. That remains an unfinished business of struggle, and economic justice is unfinished business. So we've achieved the measure of scientific racial equality, but not resource equality. On the football field, we're dominant in the National Football League, but the 32 teams are all white owners. In Major League Baseball, not one black owner. And that means that if you go from picking cotton balls, picking footballs and basketballs, and not ownership, you've not made progress that you deserve to make. We should be able to control our resources. And right now, we can't get the capital to do so. A black person with collateral, can I get the same money from a bank that a white person can get with an idea? The gap in access to resources is a huge gap.
It seems that even when there is a level playing field, it's a great struggle just to keep it level. And this is, you know, true even in very developed countries like the U.S.
Well, we didn't know how good baseball could be until everybody could play. On the playing field, it's relatively basically equal. But beyond the field, it is not. So picking cotton was not that bad, except we could pick cotton, but we couldn't own the land. We couldn't take it to the gin. We couldn't turn it into textiles. We couldn't sell it on the international market. We could only stay at the bottom level. Same is true with athletics.
Now, it's the 70th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which recognizes the inherent dignity and equal and inalienable rights of all human beings. Why is it that this declaration sort of isn't very much a kind of front and center document for humanity? I mean, the Secretary General said yesterday that the words of that document are not matched by the facts on the ground.
Well, they're not, because those who have privileges and advantages don't want to give them up. I remember I went to South Africa in 1979 for the first time. And I met with this bevy of press at the airport, and I was going to ask the question, and they waited would not get me kicked out of the country. So I was...
Apartheid was still raging, of course.
Yeah, and so I said, well, what about our system? So I said, human rights for all human beings, measure human rights by one yardstick. That's it. It was offensive. The idea of human rights for all human beings, measure human rights by one yardstick, was offensive. And it remains offensive in many parts of the world today. Human rights for all human beings, and measured by one yardstick. That's why I say effort and hard work matters. Inheritance and access matters more. In America, there's something called basketball. And the season in March, the colleges play March Madness, moving toward the big game. And last week, there was an upset with the number 16 team beat the number one team. Not by projection, but by on the court. The court was the same length and width. The number 16 won the game. That can only take place when you don't get advantages based upon a privilege based upon the race.
Final question. If there is a failure of politicians to lead on racial justice presently, where will the leadership for change come from now? Is it time for sort of a new revamped international global civil rights movement?
Well, it comes from church. It comes from, a moral tone must be said, it comes from political leaders, it comes from a wide range of areas. It may come from students. We've been fighting for a long time about excessive violence in this country. And yet some of the 17 kids were killed in Florida. It hit us differently. And so now the whole world is moving toward ban assault weapons. You never quite know when that magic mark is going to hit and take off.
Do you believe this is a watershed moment on that issue?
I'm convinced it is, because Americans own 350 million guns, 8 million assault weapons. They shut up schools and churches. They can shoot down airplanes. It's too dangerous to have such weapons in society such as ours. And so there is a watershed moment, I believe, on that question. Should have been a long time ago, but it just may be now. But there must be a watershed moment on poverty and violence. There's too much poverty in America. Too few people got too much. Too many have too little, and too much violence, and too much gun violence. We are the most violent nation on earth. We make the most guns, and we shoot them, mostly each other. We make the most bombs, and we drop them. We must choose coexistence over co-annihilation, and future over funerals.
But can the coalition really be that broad in order to get to have results?
It has to be broad, but it all starts in local areas. A given area will inspire you at the local level to join a more massive coalition. It must be a massive global coalition of conscience. We must value life everywhere. We've globalized capital, we've globalized technology, we've globalized athletics. We must not globalize human rights, workers' rights, women's rights, children's rights, and environmental security. We must globalize all the values that make life life for everybody.